My guest at this time is Carrie Severino. She is Chief Counsel and Policy Director at the Judicial Crisis Network. We've asked her to discuss President Trump's search for a new Supreme Court justice, what she wants to see in the nominee, and what we're seeing from Democrats who are already lining up to oppose the nomination. And Carrie, thanks so much for being with us.
Great to be here.
Before we get started on the details of this story, explain for our listeners a little bit more about the Judicial Crisis Network and the work you do.
Yeah, we're a group originally founded to help get George Bush's nominees confirmed, like Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Alito. And now we have just continued and expanded. And our real goal is to get judges who are going to be faithful to the Constitution, apply the laws as they're written. So we couldn't be happier with Justice Gorsuch. And now we're looking for what I'm calling Gorsuch 2.0. We're really excited to have another pick on the court.
Well, unlike other presidents, President Trump has this public list of names that he vows to choose from. So you've had a lot of time now. I think he initially released it during the campaign, so 2 years or more, of looking at some of these names. So we're hearing reports also that he's personally interviewed four of these people on the list on Monday, namely Judges Barrett, Kethledge, Kavanaugh, and Thapar. Are you comfortable with anyone on the list? And what do you specifically think of those four, if that is in fact the short list?
Yeah, I mean, really, the whole list is excellent, but this short list in particular has a lot of just outstanding attributes. You've got the constitutional legal scholar in Amy Coney Barrett. You've got Emul Thapar, who has your district court experience as well as now being an appellate court judge. He was even a short lister and interviewed by the president for Justice Gorsuch's spot. So he obviously has been in the running for a while. And then two Kennedy clerks, Judges Kethledge and Kavanaugh, both of whom have long track records on the bench, and both of whom are incredibly highly regarded in their field. So it's just really an embarrassment of riches. I think I could be in love with any of these nominees.
And we're expected to get that name this coming Monday. Carrie, what do you expect from this confirmation process? And I guess when I say that, I mainly mean the Democrats. We've already seen some of them claim that you can't have a nomination considered right before a midterm election. You got others who say we can't do this. You can't have the president making this sort of a nomination while Bob Mueller's investigation is still going on. And of course, there's the concern that the nominee, from their perspective, would be far more to the right than Justice Kennedy was. So what do you make of what we've seen from Democrats so far?
Oh, well, their claim that that this is, you know, we shouldn't have nominations heard in a midterm election year is absolutely ludicrous and even got fact-checked away by the New York Times saying that's not actually what Leader McConnell said. Actually, a huge number of the previous nominees to the court have been in midterm election years. There's going to be a vote on this this nominee in time really to get them sitting on the court for October. So I think no worries there. But what we are getting previews of is what has now become the Democratic go-to playbook, which is character assassination, distortions of the nominee's record, sometimes even outright lies and deception, anything, because they know they simply don't have the votes to block a well-qualified, experienced, you know, down straight shooter like Justice Gorsuch, because he not only got all the Republican votes, but three Democrat votes besides. I predict what we're going to see again, another very similar nominee. So they know they don't have the votes. They're just trying to find some other narrative that maybe they can shoehorn the nominee's record into. So we're hearing people talking about, you know, hysteria over Roe versus Wade is dead, which is something we've heard from, you know, not the 80s on, literally almost every single Republican nomination. They say this is going to be the end. So, you know, the little sky is falling. And then you're saying they're going to overturn Obamacare. They're going to end equal voting rights. I mean, it's really a kind of hysterical list. But I think just everyone take a deep breath and try to look at the actual facts on the ground. As it happens, all these people are excellent and have great records of upholding the Constitution and reading the laws as they're written. So I don't think you have to worry that the disastrous consequences that the left is previewing are anywhere around the corner.
It's probably not too hard, Carrie, for conservatives to understand at least a little bit at a gut level what the liberals are thinking right now. I would imagine that when you first saw that Justice Scalia passed and we hadn't seen Mitch McConnell take the stand that he did to push off the consideration of a new nominee until the new president was in place, that was probably a little unnerving for you.
Oh yeah. No, that was a moment where you're going, oh, everything has changed. And I think, I mean, that really, the corollary there will be if Justice Ginsburg steps down and Trump's in a position to replace her, because I think that's more what we thought when we thought, okay, is Scalia going to be replaced by President Obama? This is a much different situation. I mean, Justice Kennedy, yes, he was a swing vote, but he swung much more often with the conservatives. A couple of the last recent terms were pretty discouraging for conservatives, but this term, actually, he voted 100% with the conservative bloc, and interestingly, that the justice he aligned the most with was Justice Gorsuch, and vice versa. So it turns out, for all of the hysteria of this is going to have this huge dramatic impact on the court, it turns out that you couldn't have picked a better justice to mimic Justice Kennedy. So if we get a similar pick to Gorsuch, then I think, you know, any liberals who are worried about keeping Kennedy's legacy alive should be happy. Now, I obviously there's going to be differences, and as there are differences between Gorsuch and Kennedy, they're not 100%. But no two justices are going to be 100% overlap. At the end of the day, the most important thing is this is going to be someone who is faithful to the law, is faithful to the Constitution. So we're not looking for a specific outcome in any one case or the other. It's you want someone who's going to keep those principles first and foremost.
Are you worried at all about Republicans? I mean, right now we have 51 Republican senators, really 50 who are going to vote because John McCain's not there. And now you have Susan Collins over the weekend saying, well, I don't want anyone who's going to threaten Roe v. Wade. So she's putting her litmus test out there. And who knows if there are any others. Jeff Flake has made noises about opposing judicial nominations if Trump doesn't take action on, I don't know what it was, tariffs or something, legislatively related. So are you concerned about keeping all the Republicans together here?
I think it would be shocking to me if anyone, the Republicans, would want to vote against this nominee again. I think this is going to be someone like Justice Gorsuch, where they're just so overwhelmingly talented, experienced, fair-minded, so that people on both sides of the aisle who've actually practiced before them, not who are just spinning out nightmare scenarios from their desk, but people who really know them know they're going to give all the sides a shot. That's not someone I think any of these people are going to want to vote against. You know, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski and Jeff Flake, they all voted for Justice Gorsuch. So I really don't think that's going to be an issue. What I think is more likely is you're going to see more Democrats get a lot of pressure because there are 10 Democrats running for re-election in states that Trump won, and they have a stark choice between them now. Maybe they thought that people would forget it in the last confirmation hearing, but no one's going to forget how they vote if they're voting in, you know, say, September and they're in the elections in November. They have to decide, are they going to stand with the president's nominee, who is clearly, from the list we're looking at, clearly going to be someone who's an outstanding pick for the Supreme Court, or are they going to align themselves with a liberal fringe, the Democratic Party, vote lockstep with Chuck Schumer? That might play well in California, in Massachusetts, in New York. I don't know how that plays in West Virginia and Indiana, North Dakota, Missouri, Montana, you know, all of those states. I think it's going to be a much tougher choice and we're seeing some people already trying to walk a very narrow tightrope. How do I keep the bulk of my state, who actually likes what the president's doing, particularly on the court, and yet not invoke the rage of the kind of hair on fire left?
Good point there, Kerry, because the five states you mentioned not only went for Trump, they went overwhelmingly for Trump. There are some others that were more on the margins, like Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin and so forth. So those senators might not feel the pressure, but the other ones, where he won by 20 points and in some cases more, could feel it a little bit more. Last question, a little bit away from this debate. The last time we talked was right after the confirmation of Justice Gorsuch. And at the time, you said you were obviously very happy with that, but you were concerned at the pace with which the president was appointing nominees to the district and appellate court levels. You were quite satisfied with the choices he was making. He just needed to make more of them. So where are we standing on that?
Well, I think the holdup right now is not with the White House. It's with getting judges confirmed through the Senate. And actually, the Judiciary Committee also has been processing these in rapid pace. But now there's about 40 nominees waiting on the floor for votes. And a lot of that has to do with the procedural hurdles that Democrats are trying to use. They know they don't have the votes to block any of them. I mean, if they don't have the votes to block a Supreme Court nominee, and I don't think they will, they really can't. Some of these people are just overwhelming. And some of them even have unanimous support. But that's not stopping the Democrats from slowing it down. They're using a process called cloture to require up to 30 hours of additional debate on every single nominee, one at a time, single file line. I mean, that when you add that up and you calculate in that the Senate really only works 3 days a week, which most people don't realize, it will take literally decades to get all of his nominees filled. Add that to the fact that we've had about 40 a little over 40 nominees confirmed. In that period of time, in this year and a half the president's been in office, over 90 vacancies have come up. So, you know, you don't have to be a math major to figure out if you're confirming 40 and you have 90 new vacancies, we are running at a deficit. So we just happen to be at a moment where there's a lot of retirements. Maybe it's demographics and the baby boom aging. I don't know. But the Senate doesn't even need to keep pace with previous presidents. They actually are going to need to pick up the pace. So we need to stop the foot dragging by the Democrats as well, and different proposals to change some of the Senate rules to do that. I don't know what it's going to take to break the logjam, but something needs to be done.
Well, one thing Leader McConnell is doing is keeping the Senate in town in August, so we'll see how much gets accomplished during those weeks. And, of course, we'll have confirmation hearings at some point, most likely this summer, perhaps slightly after Labor Day. Who knows exactly when they'll be scheduled, but we'll have a name to go along with this process soon, and we look forward to talking with you then. Thanks, Carrie, very much for your time today.
Good chatting.
Carrie Severino is Chief Counsel and Policy Director at the Judicial Crisis Network. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.